I'm talking to Canon William Johnson here in Enniskillen. Where originally did you come from?
I was born in County Donegal, just on the right on the border, Fermanagh border.
What was the name of the place?
Teeve Moor, Grouse Lodge, Pettigo. We were quite isolated, a sort of a cul-de-sac, and then it meant to both troubles. The hard border was caused by troubles, obviously. We had to protect ourselves, and the roads were closed. And when I worked in across the border, it cost me an extra 20 miles every day getting home, because the small roads were all blocked physically to stop terrorists using them.
Yeah.
But the customs, in the early days, it was customs, but they weren't physically closed. But you got your book stamped, and you got concessions. We stopped us across the border at certain times. The hard border was really caused by terrorism and terrorists hiding in Donegal and Ballyshannon and wherever, you know. Came up to Pettigo, and they always had a few people that supported them, I suppose, and give them the information. And that's where there were attacks in our area, you see, and in Pettigo. A soldier got killed trying to use a bomb in Pettigo, and several people injured. And people driven out of their homes, too. You know, Udi Arman murdered right at the border, the fellow Funston, as you would know. And
so what years are we talking about? Is this during the Troubles?
Yeah. The first Troubles, they weren't too bad, apart from physically closing the roads. Yeah. Didn't affect us all that much, really. But then I moved away to university and then came back again to Castledurg, right into the middle of it. Well, I was in Belfast before that. Came into University of Belfast. The troubles were just starting right about then. And was there for Bloody Friday, you know.
Right. We
were standing up, we were on high ground, and I heard a bomb, and I looked out of the window, and one bomb after another going off in the city. And nobody knew where they were going to go off, just or indiscriminate bombing.
And so, tell me then, as soon as you came out of university, you say you went back to your home?
No, I went back to Belfast for 2 years as a curate,
yeah.
Assistant clergyman in Belfast. And then I came down to Castledurg, right on the border of Tyrone, be sort of near home. But then the roads between us and Castledurg were all closed, and you had to go through Pettigo and back out again. It cost me an extra 10 mile each way. So, but Castledurg was, of course, was right on the border again. Very, suffered a lot, Castledurg, as you would know. A lot of people murdered there. And a lot of bombs, and the town was wrecked, you know. It had to be sort of closed off then with the British Army.
And what was your brief there as a curate? Were you looking after people?
Oh, you were, of course, sure. And we got a lot of people murdered, you see, and carry out the funerals and visit people around the border and got threats. You see, I was a member of the security forces in my early days and in Enniskillen in the first Troubles for a while. But then I joined up again when I came to Castledurg, believe it or not. I had connections with the police and I joined up part-time. So then that brought me under notice too. And
it's fascinating because you were a clergyman during the day. And then you put on a uniform at night time.
Do night duty, or whatever you did, whatever we were told to do, and you had to check your car and all that sort of thing, and the family couldn't. You had to be. And you were limited to who you could let near the house to do repairs, or at one time we were told when I moved up to not let the postman call at the house, unless you knew him well. He might see your car, see me parked. And that was just the
so.
Way
was
it.
There a lot of untrust? People not trusting one another. Even no, their neighbours.
Neighbours, you had to be very careful because you could be a terrorist living next to you.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is. And actually, and then we got people murdered belonging to my parish. You see, a young lad too. It used to belong to our youth club and friends with our children. Him and his girlfriend, and she lost an eye, and it got a lot of publicity, and we were tortured with the media coming to take photographs. And
oh, where was this now?
In Castledurg, down near Castledurg, near Ardstraw. I'd been in Castledergan assistant, then I got my own parish in outside Castledergan, Drumquin. And there were a lot of our people connected with the security forces, UDR, army, police, working for the security forces, and they were all under threat, you know, and attacked. Castledergan suffered horrifically during the Troubles in that area.
It did indeed. It was a hot spot. And so... So you were faced with this every day, were you?
Oh, every day, every day. Sometimes my churches had to be guarded. It was probably foolish joining the security forces then, but I joined it.
What was the clergyman doing joining the security forces?
I don't know, I just, law and order, was told by the army that the mess with local people that knew the area and have to do their bit, and rather than expecting other people to guard you. So I had been in the police early days, part-time police, First Troubles, and joined up again. And my family, some of them served in the army, you see, in the First World War, and there was a military tradition. And
so
attracted to the people, you know, to the security forces.
Were you ever threatened, or was
there... Oh, was I? I got a threat too, but sometimes that's, you just learn to live with it.
Tell me what happened.
Well, I just got a phone call in the middle of the night and said that if somebody phoned in to say that it was, we're keeping an eye on me, bad boys. And you had a...
What did that sound like when you
heard? Well, I didn't tell the family the whole of it, but you just learned to live with it. Other people were threatened too. There were a lot of threats at that time, you know, because security forces are very obvious out patrolling.
But
you know,
what were you told to do in that threat?
Oh, well, police picked up a threat and said that you were under notice and that there were the terrorists who had known about you and they were going to take some action against you, and you had to be careful and wear a bulletproof vest and that sort of thing. Carry a revolver too at times.
And did you check your car every
day? Oh, every day, every time you went out. You couldn't. It had to be checked every time.
Oh, and what about your family then?
I mean, they were taught too by the army how to check the car when they were young. Taken down to the army barracks and showed how to check it at night with a lamp and all that sort of thing. The soldiers taught us. So, and that.
And how many years then were you in before you came down here to Enniskillen? You were in.
I was in Kilskerry and Trinnick then.
Where?
Kilskerry and Trinnick for the last part of my ministry. The last 20 years of my ministry was in Kilskerry and Trinnick.
Up in Trinnick?
Yeah.
And that's in Tyrone, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, not that far away. And then the Troubles sort of fizzled out in a sort of a way. I did 24 years in the security force altogether. Two years the First Troubles, and then 22 the last Troubles, you know, part-time.
Tell me, what kind of skirmishes did you come across, or attacks on...
Oh, well, the barrack was attacked when lady was in duty, blown up, you know, and got my ears damaged too, but, and different things, and involved in an ambush one night, and that's the First Troubles out near the Rosslea border, and that's just
what happened. What happened in that occasion?
Oh, well, you were just it was on the border, you see, and the patrol commander, I noticed someone suspicious, and the patrol commander said to take cover and cock the weapons, and but the two. The police searched the area with modern equipment later, and they said there was two men waiting, I suppose, for us coming off duty. So they said, but then I'd noticed someone, and we took action quite quickly, and they went back across the border, across the river, just, you know. And then the last Troubles, we just watched all the time. There were bombs going off in Castledergan quite regularly, and you had to be involved with the bereaved. You know,
but okay, we'll do it in stages because you have an incredible story and it's all very mixed up, really. So taking it from the first, so you grew up on the border.
I worked in Pettigo in a shop. Then I went to Enniskillen. Worked 10 years in Pettigo, in shops in Pettigo, and then I came to Robert Dickies. I was manager there in Dickies and in Enniskillen. Then I went to university.
And what years were those years? I came to
1960. I came to Enniskillen in 60, and went to university in 66.
Why did you feel a need to join the police at that stage?
Oh, that was a old B specials or part-time police, and just joined, you know.
Because you could see trouble coming in.
Trouble, and you were sort of attracted to that sort of thing, and liked it, and liked the police, and out to the fellas, you know, and my mates were on it, so I joined too. And you got a few shillings as well, which was useful then. Yeah. You know, and I liked the...
I
was a marksman. I was a marksman, you see. I was good with shooting and drilling and that sort of thing. Yeah. Sort of liked that bit of it. Then when the troubles were over, I left then. And...
But take me through the next stage then. So after you left Enniskillen as a young soldier, or a young...
Businessman,
I suppose, at that stage. You joined the clergy then?
I felt the call. I'd been involved in the church work. So then I was accepted for ministry.
And what year then?
I was 66. So I went to England for a year to get the proper qualifications, and then went to Trinity then. Oh. See, I started school when I was 9, when the guards come for me. And I left when I was 14.
How do you mean the guards came for you?
I hadn't started, I was 9. And we were in an isolated area, and my father was ill, and asthma, and my father thought, well, time went on just, and then the guard arrived one day, Guard Galvin, I still remember him, and said, you and your sister have to go to school. She was 7.5 and I was 9. And as soon as I come 14, I went into work in the shop for 10 shillings a week. No, nothing for 3 months. Do you see if you're any use? And then 10 shillings a week, 50p, now you'd call it. And I had no education. Then I had to study at home.
Okay, and that was in County Donegal?
Yes, on the border. I went to school in Northern Ireland because the Church of Ireland school was just as near as the state school was, because we were right on the border. But there was a lot of smuggling and that sort of thing. Yeah.
But it was tough, was it? You know, you had to start working at 9.
Oh, you see, actually, the common market, Southern Ireland was in trouble financially after the war, poverty. Long as only got a border, you had to pay for the doctor. And my mother was sick; she died when I was young, and I had asthma. And any money you had went to the doctors; you had to pay them. And usually, they came from Northern Ireland. The doctors mostly. Across the border, and so then I had to go to work. Just that was it. Small farm I had.
Yeah, and so then that's why I suppose. How did you come down to Enniskillen then? For what reason did you come here?
Oh, better pay, more prospects, bigger shop. Eventually became manager and good wages. Then you see.
What was the name of the shop?
Robert Dickinson's, still there in Enniskillen. Yeah. So then, studied for one O-level.
And you were a counter-buy-in there at that time?
Yeah, and then I got the manager's job then, you see. Yeah. So I became a personnel manager.
And why did you leave that then?
To go to the church, to study. I had to go to study first for 4 years.
Know. Is it because you got the call, or you felt you'd like to do it?
Yeah, that's right. And then I took it from there, but I had to get the qualifications, and then I studied on till I got a PhD.
Okay, and was it, did you say you went to Trinity for that?
No, I went to England first for a year to get three more GCSEs, and then to do the ordination examination, then London University for Roman Theology, and then Open University, then the University of Ulster, and then Bradford and Queen's for my PhD. Did MA and all that sort of thing. Studied all my life. Once I got the taste of education, I kept at it till 10 years ago I graduated from Queen's and Bradford with a PhD.
Yeah. So, but then, when did you go to Castle Derg?
I came to Castle Derg in 1972 as a curate assistant. I was 6 years in Castle Derg. Then I moved down the road a bit to my own parish.
So they were the worst years of the Troubles and your time there.
Yeah.
What was the most outstanding memory of that time? What do you remember most that stayed with you?
I suppose the young fellow Foster, one of my parishioners, we knew very well, been murdered. There's other ones as well, of course, but that stands out. You know, been murdered with a bomb under his car, and his girlfriend losing her eye and having to deal with that and the follow-up and all that sort of thing.
And
he was... buried, and then part of the body was got a couple of days later in Moore funeral. You know, part of the body wasn't all buried at once.
So would that have been a sister? The lady, the girl who lost her eye, was that a sister of Alberta, who is now Johnson, who's married to Esmond Johnson up in Trillig?
That's right. Yeah. Yep. That's it. Yeah.
It's the same yeah, story.
Yeah. 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 And you, Lorraine.
Did you know that boy? He was a very young lad, I think, at the time. He was only 18.
18, yeah. He joined the. He worked in Muldoon's in the building trade, and then he joined the RAR part time and put a bomb under his car. I suppose his neighbours had been watching him, and there were a lot of support for the IRA around the border. Yeah. And then there was enough on Castledown to bring people across the border to. She brought in bombs regularly into the
town. Why do you think Castleturg was hit so badly?
Near the border. Yeah. Right near the border. A lot of roads over there. And it was impossible to patrol them all. And quite a number of IRA supporters lived in that area as well. Very nationalist parts too, you know.
And did you know any? Would you have known those
supporters? Oh, you knew them, but IRA. You knew some of them, but you wouldn't have known them all.
I know.
And another night I was called out to a parishioner. I wasn't duty that night, and I was called out to a parishioner. He just moved house, and there was a bomb at his house. We went out, and the terrorist was putting the bomb under the car and went off and blew his hands off and his nose off and had to deal with that. And my parishioner was there, and his wife under the bed and the wee baby, and she was expecting, and the wonders were all glasses out of the wonders, you know. And funny, I'd visited him that week, for he built a new house. But sadly, the man he employed who was at the building and worked with him, Jimmy was a plumber, and the other fellow was a builder, and he came back one night with a bomb with him, put it under his car, and his mates blew himself up. He died then in hospital. We got him to hospital, obviously. But I was the first there that night. Me and another policeman was out, and I knew exactly where he lived. For the rest of his security force wouldn't have known if he'd only moved to a very safe area. But the fellow that built the bungalow knew. Because he worked with Jimmy, for him, Muldoon that built it.
So you think that he informed, or he...
He can't do it himself, he brought the bomb.
He brought the bomb?
Ah, the bomb that he shared his lunch with and worked with. He was on blew himself up, putting the bomb under his vehicle.
He blew himself
up? He did, the bomb went off underneath the car when he was putting it in.
Yeah.
And then we had to go out and... He's made
what did you, when you, I mean, that's all very confusing and mixed up. When you think that here's a man who's best friends with another man.
That's right.
Having their lunch together. And
he worked out
to kill him, but killed himself in the process.
You see, young Foster worked with the same firm, Muldoon's. The fellow that was injured, his girlfriend was badly injured. He'd worked with the same firm. And... they were watching, you see, and IRA men working with them. And came round that night, because nobody else would have known where the house was, because he had moved only very recently. Now it would stand out too, I'd forgotten about that. And
did you think then, did you have any remorse for, I mean, here's a man that was trying to cause death to somebody else, but he killed himself. So, how as a clergyman, how did you feel? Did you feel that, you know, he...
Oh, it was a sense of disbelief. How could somebody do that? Because actually, the plumber whose car was blown up, he was very an ecumenical man. His family were often blamed. I've heard them been blamed for being too friendly with the nationalists, but yet... his workmate came round at night, because he knew exactly, he'd been there at the bungalow for 3 months building and working and knew the fields and sitting and taking his lunch. And Jimmy was a plumber with that firm, you see. This other fellow was a builder. They'd worked together several times, shared their lunch, I'm told. Oh, it was in the news round the world, sure.
And but, did you think that was an awful waste of life? And
oh, of course it was, yeah. But that's the way it is.
Destruction. So attending to people like that and trying to make sense of it all must have... Did it make you a more religious man, in a sense?
Well, I suppose it did, but you had to do it just as your profession, and you had to stand by them as best you could. And fortunately, none of my... I knew none of my young lads got involved with, should we say, loyalist paramilitaries, which had been quite easy, because, you know, people were feeling the police weren't doing enough, and we said, well, we'll have to take the law in our own hands here to protect ourselves. And there was a couple of murders in Castledeg of Catholic people and also of Protestants, you know, that weren't in the security forces.
So were you afraid your own family, your own sons would join up with the...
Oh, no, my sons were too young.
Oh, sorry, what sons were you talking about?
No, but young working class lads belonged to my youth club or anything.
Yeah.
Could have easily been got involved, but thankfully nobody...
nobody did.
You know, well, not that I know of.
Yeah.
No. They joined the security force as best they could and supported that way, you know.
Did you ever fire a gun at anyone?
No, I had an army gun, but I never cocked it, you know, but I never had to fire it, you know. Not in that situation. But you had to be ready, you know, and trained in different weapons, but... That's just, you're young, you just join these things. Once you're in, then you have to stay in, for you, at least you have the protection. If you're in, you're knowing you're in. If you leave then, you have no protection. So you had to stay there then. You're on the wheel of fate, you had to stay.
Is that how you felt?
Not really. You stayed, you're loyalty to your mates. And knew a lot of people in the security force, and they would have come to me, the soldiers, for references. You know, when there were any young fellas, the officer would have sent to me, you're security force yourself, you know the situation, and made it very difficult to get a reference from a clergyman in the ordinary squad, you know, so they sent them to me. I was everybody's clergyman that time.
Yeah, you can imagine they'd all want to know you better, or come up to you and ask your... So you got to know a lot of people that way. How did you... Because you're the man that was in the middle of all of this. So did you find that these people were terribly genuine people? Or, you know, was there a passion to want... You know, the more you're attacked, the more you want to defend yourself.
Oh, you did. You had to. Yeah, you weren't going to run away. You had to, when you join the security force, you must be prepared for a risk.
Yeah.
You have to tick the rough with the smooth. And it was a dangerous area, and the soldiers were involved there too, you know, and I could run all right with the soldiers. Ordinary.
But did that make you a more patriotic person then?
Well, I suppose it did. Yeah, determined to defeat terrorism. And there's quite a lot of... suicides at Christmas time, especially among security forces. You know, at Christmas time, I had a couple of that, which were hard to deal with too. You know, committing suicide.
And why would they do that?
Well, just, why do people commit suicide? That's, doctors can't even commit that, you know, and is depression and away from home and things going wrong, and sure, that's the whole big story there, but I had to deal with a couple of that too in my time. As well as an ordinary minister, you'll have to deal with that. Sure, today it's happening all the time.
God, you had an extraordinary life, didn't you?
Yeah, well, this is it.
And in that length of time then, because there was a threat on your life and there was a threat and you were out at night time, were you worried about your wife and children?
Oh, of course, sure, yeah. Because the night the bomb was in the barrack, I'd rung and said there was a bomb here, we saw them. I saw them actually, but we were hemmed in. They got away, you see, but we got them later actually.
Who were they?
Oh, they were local men. Well, up the road they were local Republican family, two brothers, and they actually killed. We had a wee house we bought for retirement, and I set it out to the man, and he was murdered one night. He went over to the contractor next door. He used to help him out. And there was a bomb under his digger because he was allegedly going to work for security forces. And it was one of them fellas did that. It also bombed the barrack, but we didn't get him that night, but he was got later. He got manlier and he was back again. So I got him and his brother and those others. So I'd rang the wife to say it. There was a bomb at the station. We got the station cleared and tried to get the houses cleared. I rang the parish priest at time to open the hall, I think, and got the town cleared and went off then. Everyone's at home. The windows shook, you know, and the children were upset, for they didn't know how it had been safe or not. But I was in the strong room, just coming out of the door of it, and I remember the dust falling down around me, you know, getting the police out of there. And the army were there too, getting them out.
Was there casualties?
No, fortunately there wasn't. There was people injured, yes. Yeah. Police had got their ears and injured. But I'd stuffed my ears and put a scarf around my head. It didn't affect my ears then, but then it's later the doctor said, now I have tinnitus.
Yeah.
But that could have been fire in the early days, firing weapons without the earmuffs.
Yeah. And so, but that was here in Enniskillen.
No, at Castledare.
Oh, no, sorry, just to repeat that again. That's the barracks in Castledare.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Here was, there was in Ballinamara, there was a part-time station, midday, isn't it, and you did duty in Enniskillen or St. Round, you know, troubles were phasing out then. There was more ordinary police duty, you know, and duty was cut down, so that was it.
It was terrible. If you had to face that all over again, would you do it?
You probably would.
Would you go back into that?
I would, yeah.
Castle Derg.
Yeah, I would, yeah. I like Castle Derg now. Children are born there. They look on it as their home. They're very happy there, actually. There are very good schools there, too. And then I was involved in four schools and committee and chairman. We had several schools in our parish, which I was chairman of. You're greatly involved with young people, you know, youth clubs and young people. At a very scattered parish and four churches.
And you looked after all four churches?
Yeah. Three services Sunday morning, 10, 11, quarter past 12 and a half, two.
Yeah. What did you preach about in those days?
Oh, you preached the gospel as best you knew it, and you had to relate it to everyday life.
How did you manage to do that?
Oh, well, you do it. That's what you're trained to do, and you do it. Somebody can ask you, what about evolution? Or hear people talking. Somebody else could say, I've been tackled at work about gay marriages. What's the Church of Ireland believe? Somebody else says, Jehovah's Witnesses have been in my door. What do they believe? Somebody else says, what about, you know, do you not preach salvation here? Getting born again, all that. So you have to deal with that.
But if somebody shoots somebody and then they come up to you and say, is it right to shoot back? What would you say then?
Oh, you'd say you have to defend yourself legally, yes, of course. You use minimum force, of course, but that's a big question all the time, even to this day. Burglars? Can you shoot a burglar if you feel your life's in danger? But you'll have to defend it at court.
Yeah. And would you have preached about the troubles and
how? Oh, you would have related that. Yes, you knew your congregation; they're all supporting you.
And what would you say to them?
Oh, you tell
defend
them to
yourself and
work and be careful, and anything suspicious, and report it. Support the security forces, and you know. Be good neighbours and do your best. Live according to the Ten Commandments, you know. And fortunately, we had very good supportive people always in our ministry.
Yeah.
I never had any problem in parishes. Like some clergy, I never had always very supportive people. And my wife was involved in Mother's Union and with the ladies and that sort of thing too. And my family were able to play the organ and help me with Sunday school as well when they got up. That was... and youth work and quizzes and all that sort of thing. So it was a family affair. We never, you see clergy now say, Monday's my quality day off, don't come to the rector. We never bothered doing that. We just, the rector was always there and people come and went all times of day and night.
Yeah. You were always on call.
Always on call. Sometimes we were sick, the wife would go out in the middle of the night maybe to people and bother. Then you get domestic problems too you have to deal with.
Yeah. So you got great. And what's your wife's name?
Sylvia.
And what was her maiden name?
Dernan, in Enniskillen. They were business people. They had a shop in Enniskillen. That's how we met. I was managing Dickies and she worked in her own shop, so that's how we met.
Oh, I see.
Do business.
Yeah. And
she was quite a bit younger than me. She's 12 years younger than me, but she was very supportive, you know, and very popular too.
And did she have any bereavements in her family?
No, not really. No, but there were members of her family who were in the security forces, but they were never unfortunate. There were no bereavements, no.
Yeah. And the Enniskillen bombing, I suppose I have to mention that. You weren't here at that time, really.
No, I wasn't in Castlederg at that time, or that area. But I knew about it, and the Weiss people lived here, but nobody immediately connected to it. You see, there was one at Pettigo, that's my brother, was at the church that Sunday, but it didn't go off.
Yeah.
And our band, the pipe band at home, was out that Sunday, but the bomb didn't go off, fortunately.
Imagine.
But it wiped out the small community that too, it went off.
Yeah, when you think of these things, you know, it, as I say, it doesn't bear thinking about, but there were bombs that didn't go off, and you know, you'd wonder, was that divine intervention or something stopping it going off? Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah. And so, to finish, do you think so, when you came down here, life became a lot easier and the troubles were, you know, you had the Good Friday Agreement and things were dying down a bit?
Yes, it was. Great help, especially if you lived around the border too, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same threat. You could cross the border without, or you could bring when we were at home, you know, if you brought in a tradesman, you know, you couldn't bring one from Northern Ireland because he might be connected with the security forces. And you were limited where you could go and do. And
do you have any family still living in Donegal?
Not now. My brother lives over in Northern Ireland. My sister died. And the house is set out now at home, you know. So my other brother, he's married at Pettigo. He lives in the Northern Ireland side. But we have the farm still there.
Yeah. And do you... I suppose life has become easier for you now. Are you retired now?
Yeah, retired. I'm retired. We just do Sunday work. Cover down Kilmore Diocese down around there. Yeah. Take service on Sunday, help out clergymen who are ill or whatever.
Yeah.
Mostly out every Sunday so far. Since the last 7.5 years I retired, I'm hardly at home at all on a Sunday. I've taken service with his vacancies, with his illness and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Listen, it's been an incredible story. When you think of you've crammed so much into your life, you know, and you're now in a position where I suppose you can sit back. And finally, can I ask you, has this left a lasting effect on you? You know, all those years of being involved with people who were victims of violence.
I think it has. It's difficult to trust people. And my biggest problem would be people who still support terrorists, you know, Sinn Féin and that sort of thing. I would find that hard to understand, you know. I wouldn't support terrorists of any kind, and that's why, thankfully, our community, apart from one character in Belfast, the paramilitaries, when they went up for election, never got any support. Well, there was one man, but he's gone now, but usually they kept away from that, supported the more democratic parties, but I'd find it difficult how people go out and vote for those people, you know. It's very hard to understand.
Yeah. Canon William Johnson, thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you.